You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Hello, everybody. You're very welcome to the YBIG Footy Show with Dave O'Grady, the programme by the fans, for the fans. This is episode 2 in our podcast series, and we can be found on ybig.ie and foot.ie, as well as theworldstalking.com. Coming up on the show, the Irish team prepares for their crunch playoff tie with Estonia. Estonia of all teams. Ireland, of course, defeated Estonia in qualification for the 2002 World Cup. This time, though, the Irish lads hope to make it to the European Championships for the first time since 1988, and we all know what happened at those Euros. Don't forget, if you're an Irish fan or soccer fan in general, you can get involved with the show by mailing theworldstalking@gmail.com. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on this edition of the programme by John, who's all the way in Rahini, and you're a big fan of youboysingreen.ie. How are you, John?
That's what I tell you, Dave. How you doing?
Not too bad. And Paul, you're all the way in London, I do believe. You're actually a Rossi man joining us from London. Firstly, how are you getting on in London? How long have you been there, Paul?
Too long, Dave. not too many Rossies in London, all right.
I can imagine that. Is there many actual Irish fans over there?
There is, yeah, but there's the one thing that's lacking is a good sort of pub to meet up with Irish fans. There's a Sheephaven in sort of Mornington Crescent, which is North London. But, you know, I went to watch the Russia game there, and rushed down to be there for 4, and there was only about 10 people in the pub.
Yeah.
So kind of, it lacks that. For Celtic and stuff like that, they've got a couple of pubs, but there's no real supporters pub as such for those sort of games.
Yeah, but that's an interesting one, Paul, because, you know, on both forums, actually, you see a lot of people that are in London looking to know where's the best place to go to watch the match and that. There does seem to be the support for Ireland there. I guess there's just no meet-up point for yous all.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of people in London. It's such a big place as well, I suppose. But, people are kind of quite dispersed across London, and maybe it's that, you know, people don't want to go somewhere that's too far away from them or whatever. But, yeah, it's a pity. I mean, it's something I've tried to, you know, kind of organise before in the past. But just the interest of actually people coming down to meet just doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, yeah. And how long have you actually been there? Did you move over to work, was it?
Yeah, I lived in Dublin for 5 years. And then I moved over to when I finished college to try and get a job, basically, yeah.
You probably got, oh no, maybe I'm wrong, I'm thinking the Roscommon team, it was probably Mayo actually that played London in the Connacht Championship at some stage. They nearly slipped up. I was thinking it was Roscommon for a minute, but it wasn't. But lads,
true, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it was close games. Anything can happen in London, I suppose. Lads, if I want to first look at the two forums, and I guess starting with foot.ie, no doubt there's a lot of talk surrounding the build-up to the playoff games, but there seems to be a big focus, Paul, on individual players listed. I mean, on a few of the posts I see, a lot of people are questioning the likes of Darren O'Dea. I mean, what do you think about him? Do you think he's a good defender for the Irish team? He was left out, obviously, against Armenia, but he's definitely, I think, Trapattoni has him in high regard.
Yeah, Darren O'Dea is probably one of those players, I'm probably one of the protagonists on foot today when it comes to him. I think he's doing a decent job at the moment, to be honest, based on, you know, what we need. But he's very slow and cumbersome, and I think he's one of those who's liable for lapse of concentration at the vital point. But so far for Ireland, he's doing quite well. And at Leeds, he seems to be doing well. He scored there on Tuesday, I think, as well. So that's going to help his confidence, especially going into the qualifiers should maybe done or St. Ledger. I see St. Ledger started against Watford as well, so that's a good sign too.
That's right. Yeah, that's right, John. That's probably a fair point that Paul makes. You know, it's good to see the likes of OD getting a goal midweek, and to see Sean St. Ledger starting for Leicester. I think one of their defenders got injured, so he's guaranteed a run of games, and to start off with a clean sheet, it's got to be good for himself and good for Ireland.
Yeah, definitely. I think St. Ledger is a good player. He's going to one of those players. He tends to play better for Ireland than he does at club level for some reason. But I think personally, I'd say Dunne and O'Shea or St. Ledger are probably two of them three I'd have at centre half anyway. I'd probably have O'Dea possibly fourth choice. But it'd be good to see St. Ledger getting a run, a more consistent run, I think, than he has been, because he hasn't been getting much game time at all, Leicester. So you need kind of centre house sharp enough by the time an Ireland match comes around for them.
Yeah, and John, the point that keeps being a lot of people are talking about is the fact that, you know, there's a lot of these Irish players that they don't seem to be getting too much involvement at club level, but when they put, obviously when they put on the green jersey, they give 100% and they can pull out these unbelievable performances. We've seen the likes of, as we were saying, as Paul was saying about Darren O'Dea in Moscow. I mean, he had a pretty good game there, and it seems to be, they seem to raise their game. But what is it, do you think, John, that Trapattoni is being loyal to players? He's not going by form, really, when picking the squad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I suppose, some players are just able to lift it, even though they're not playing at club level. I'd possibly say that Trapattoni doesn't look at club form enough. Look at Shane Long this season. He's been having a great season for West Brom so far. He scored 2 goals at the start of the season. Even last Sunday there against Wolves, he was brilliant, excellent, man of the match.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure Trapattoni looks at him and looks at him as an option. You know, in fairness, Long and Cox and Walters both did very well. But based on club form, I mean, I think you'd have to have Long in there in some way.
It was, you mentioned Walters, although Walters has been doing the business at Stoke. But again, Cox is, I think, 2 players behind Long in the striking role at West Brom.
That's right, yeah. I mean, Cox had a great game. You couldn't fault him the last day. See, he was completely justified. So Trapp was vindicated by choosing Cox in the end. But I still think Long, he's in such good form this season. He really should get a run in there. But just again, I'm not sure how much Trapp looks at players at club level. It's all the same, even at Seamus Coleman. I know it was a friendly against Norway when last year he was due to make his debut, but he didn't. This is a time when he was really in top form, like first 4 or 5 months in the Premiership. Everybody was talking about him, and he still didn't get a run against Norway in what was a friendly, and pretty much everybody was expecting him to get on. He did maybe start, but he didn't get a few minutes. So that'd be one point maybe that you'd say about Trapp, that he possibly doesn't look at players enough at club level to bring them through to see what they're doing. I think he more based it on training sessions and things like that, you know, and just on what he sees within the Ireland camp.
Yeah, Paul, would you go along with that, what John says there? I mean, obviously there's this issue that a lot of people have with Trapattoni in the sense that he's not going to watch the players. I know Alan Pardew had a midweek, lashed out at Trapattoni midweek, in the fact that Trapattoni had come out and said that Leon Best wasn't working hard enough, and Alan Pardew said, well, the case is Leon Best has done so much hard work at Newcastle in the last few weeks and months, really, to get into the team, and has done really well, especially since the start of the season for Newcastle. But and he was urging Trapp to go over and even have a look for himself. Do you think that's a problem? You know, the fact that Trapattoni doesn't seem to be watching these players.
Yeah, I think he sets a level of a serious focus on these end of season get-togethers, and two kind of things that stick out is this word system and mentality. If you think of players like who aren't getting in their first team, who you know would expect to get into the Ireland team, they're going to listen to Trapp first and foremost by what he says in order to at least be playing at international level, if you know what I mean. Whereas if you've got a player who's coming over and he's getting playing, you know, day in, day out, he expects it. He might not listen as much to Trapattoni as somebody who's younger, is inexperienced. And you kind of find that with the players like St. Ledger and O'Dea and others, you know, or Cox, who aren't playing at club level, but they seem to be listening and fit into his system quite well, and they have the mentality, which to me kind of speaks like they actually listen and, you know, they formulate based on what he says to go out and do what he does, and they play the system and they don't question it. Maybe we've heard in the past, Richard, don't question things even on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think Trapp necessarily likes that, but he knows with the likes of Richard Dunne, he can't not play him.
So do you mean there, Paul, that you feel that the system comes first with Trapattoni? The system is always going to come first ahead of what players are available, because even with, you know, putting the system first, there is a lot of players that do seem to fit the bill with the way Trapattoni likes it. He likes 2 defensive midfielders. Well, you know, at Wigan, James McCarthy has been playing in recent months at that very defensive midfield role as a holding midfielder for Wigan. That surely, you know, is what Trapp's looking for. But I guess there's probably some sort of loyalty thing as well.
Yeah, I think that we've shown in the past that the loyalty isn't, you know, going to stifle him too much. Like we saw Killer sort of Kilbane got, I won't say left by the wayside, but, you know, when he wasn't called up for the friendly during the summer and stuff like that. I think the loyalty only goes so far with Trapp, which is a good thing. I mean, we saw what McCarthy were caused problems, I believe, anyhow.
Yeah.
Others in the past. But, yeah, I mean, Trapp has pulled some master strokes from left field that have kind of got him away with certain things. Like, I mean, the Cox one was one where he sometimes you think maybe he just does it in the hope that he can be proved right. Or maybe really, I mean, he obviously really doesn't know what he's doing as well. And he proved it with Cox. But the whole thing with this system and this, you know, the system being bigger than the players, it's hard to disagree with it because of the results he's getting thus far. But I personally think we might have gotten better results along the way had we actually been playing the better players and had we sort of built a system around the better players we have. We're not a nation of, you know,
yeah. 11,
you know, first-teamers with 11 backups. We'll always have a few like we have the forwards at the moment. We've got, like, an abundance with five very good strikers in there. I mean, they're not world-class, but they're very good and they're playing at a high level in the Premier League. I just feel maybe, you know, we need to adapt the system. Look, just take Walters, for example. We don't play the ball on the ground ever through midfield. We hoof it. Mm. Walters came on with 15 minutes ago. Granted, the Armenians might have been tired with 10 men. He held the ball up. He made space. He brought players in. If we were to play a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3 with an attacking wingers to come off someone like Walters, I reckon we'd have possession 10% more per game. Well, maybe not that. I mean, it's hard to say something like that. But you know what I mean? I think we would create a lot more chances. We'd have a lot more possession. And we wouldn't actually be complaining as much about the likes of Andrews and Whelan in midfield because we could bypass them and still hold on to possession.
Yeah, and I want to bring that point to John. That's a fair point, Paul. But John, looking at, you know, players and that, and if we take, for example, Mark Wilson, he's been involved in what is surely a formidable Stoke defence. I think in games against the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea, Tony Pulis has highlighted Mark Wilson as probably the best player that was on the Stoke team, and nothing got down that left-hand side for Stoke because Mark Wilson had played so solidly. He, you know, he's a skillful player and, you know, he's adaptable. He can play in different positions. But do you think Trapp is a bit bonkers for not taking heed of this when it's obvious right in front of him?
Well, I'm not sure. Maybe some people would say that. But Wilson, Kieran Clark as well, I suppose, that's another one who maybe, I know he has got a run, but possibly could have got more. But I think really the main thing is the centre midfield, we're lacking a lot of creativity. I know Whelan Andrews, it's kind of been done to death with everyone talking about the lack of creative options, but he's very loyal with these players and just sticks with them. If he tried to bring new players through, I know it's not a huge amount coming through, but even Mailer, who is injured, I know that McCarthy is another option. We would have had possibly Fatty as well. Keith Fatty, for example, he played him in the centre a couple of times last time, but originally he was always playing on the wing and some as a winger, whereas he could have brought a lot more to the centre midfield, I think. And but it was a good point Paul made there about Walters being able to hold up the ball, but I think really with the striking options we have at the moment, we should definitely be playing two up front. We've so many informed strikers, apart from Keane and Doyle. I mean, Keane and Doyle are probably our most out of form strikers. But some players just don't get a chance, don't get enough opportunity, I think, to come through under Trapp, and that'll be one worry I'd have going into the next campaign. If we are under Trapattoni, are we likely to see the same faces again? You can't imagine Trapattoni team without Will and Andrews if they're both fit. So I can't see us developing. I can't see him really developing players. I know there's talks that he wants to bring in McCarthy and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure he would. I'm not sure he would do that. And I'm not sure we'd develop in the right way. We're getting results at the moment, but the next group coming up is a lot tougher than this one. But
big time, big time, Paul.
So
I don't know.
I'd like to see him push more players through, more young players.
Yeah, Paul, you probably agree with that. Do you find the central midfield partnership of Whelan Andrews, does it set your heart on fire, or do you find it painstaking to watch at times?
You know, I think, like, kind of going on John's point there, we are fans, like, always sort of we always either look for a scapegoat or a messiah, and I'm not sure the likes of Myler and McCarthy are there. McCarthy hasn't done an awful lot this season, to be fair. It looked like when he was in Hamilton, the world was his oyster sort of thing, but that hasn't formulated into anything really, or materialised even. You know, it is disheartening to see the likes of Wilson getting rave reviews, and for whatever reason, Trapp doesn't like him basically, whatever about his system. I mean, we did see in the past that, as I said earlier, he is willing to drop, you know, that loyalty only goes so far. I mean, Wilson has been doing great things, yet he's knocking in Coleman also. We know what McGeady can do, and we certainly know what he can't do. And yeah. It gets frustrating. It's one of those things where, yeah, what does a player have to do in order to get into trap side? I mean, if we had Roy Keane there, and Roy Keane basically, I don't know, Roy Keane maybe at the start or middle of his career before he kind of came more defensive, would he have been allowed to roam and play forward passes, go box to box, or would he have been told to sit and hold back? We wouldn't have recognised Keane as a world-class player at all. I mean, there's so many arguments for this. It's just Trapp is getting the points that people, when you try and make these valid, you know, points to them, they're kind of like, oh, well, it doesn't matter because Trapp is getting points. That does matter, because eventually it will come back and the cards will fall from under them and we'll end up getting a trouncing like we did against Russia. We need to be playing the foreign players, the players that are playing week in, week out in their positions. Whether they're young or old, we need to bring in the young players when we can, but we need to at least ensure that we're playing the informed players when they're available. And that's currently not happening.
Yeah, I think I understand that. And, you know, Paul, you made the point about, you know, there is a player like McCarthy and Myler to come back. And David Myler, I suppose, when he was playing week in, week out with Sunderland, he looked like perhaps a young Roy Keane in his style of play. So that could be possibly promising. But, you know, a lot of international teams, and particularly lads, this Estonia team that Ireland are going to be playing in the playoffs, a lot of international teams seem to have, you know, if they are playing in a kind of 4-4-2 formation, they'll have one defensive midfielder and one attacking midfielder, or one, at least an attacking player that likes to get on the ball, where the majority and a lot of their chances come from the centre. Could that be, you know, a strategy which we know will never be used by Trapp, but that would be a perfect opportunity to have, say, a Glenn Whelan in there and maybe a Wesley Houlihan, because it seems like for Norwich, Wesley Houlihan plays in almost a free role and everything seems to go through him. You know, John, what do you think about that?
Absolutely, yeah. I've seen Houlihan a few times this season for Norwich, and for Norwich, I've been fairly impressed with him. His distribution, he looks up all the time. He looks to go forward with the ball whenever he can. And I think he'd blend in perfectly with a more defensive midfielder like Will. And the point I was making there, it wasn't just about McCarthy. I know McCarthy hasn't been on great form, say, in the last couple of months, but just overall, any player, I think, that who is on form in that position, I'm not sure he'd get looked at. Houlihan's another example of that. I'd definitely like to see him come in there and get a chance. Anything, as you say, if you've got two defensive midfielders sitting there in the hole, the whole idea is to have two, one in front of the other, or at least have some sort of balance where one goes up and one stays forward. Mm. Both of them just seem to stay back all the time, and we're looking out on the wings and looking at Duff McGeady, and it's hard for Duff McGeady to create everything all the time, and especially when they're playing on the opposite wings to each other. So it's, you know, the whole team kind of suffers. It's a crucial position, really, and it dictates how the whole team plays, I think. So, but yeah, I'd like to see Hulk get a run. I'd like to see loads of players get a run, even for a few minutes. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Just about Estonia. I think a lot of people seem to be taking them a bit too lightly and making plans for Poland and Ukraine and things like that. I mean, it's not going to be that easy. Estonia are there on merit, and this is huge for them. It's the first time they've ever had any sort of chance to qualify for a big tournament. So the whole country's really, the whole football part of the country is going to be completely up for this, you know. They have to start somewhere, so I think I wouldn't take it too lightly so far. This could be like their Euro 88 or their Italian 90, you know. So we still have to go there and do a job. And, I mean, judging our last big game, say, well, before Armenia was the Slovakia game at home, and we weren't too impressive in that game. So the players are really going to have to lift it for the playoffs. Now, I think they will, but I certainly wouldn't be taking Estonia too lightly.
Yeah, and Paul, what do you think about Estonia? And let me put it to you first that, you know, Estonia have seemed to get good results against the big teams in their group because of it seems to be the way they've been playing. They play in a team in a way that's similar to us, and when they're not expected to do anything, they seem to hold back and catch teams on the counter-attack, whereas when they were against teams like the Faroe Islands and that, they were kind of where they were expected to come forward and attack. They didn't do much of that. So it's going to be a very interesting game tactically, I'd imagine, Paul.
Yeah, I wasn't aware, actually, that Estonia played with two fullbacks and four centre-backs like we do, in Whelan and Andrews as the centre-backs. But, Yeah, no, they seem to have a couple of Estonian friends tell me it's huge over there, and the countries come together, I assume, something like we have when we're Euro 88 and Italia 90. They've got some great results away against Serbia and Slovenia. I mean, I could never see us going to Serbia and winning, not even Slovenia. But, you know, maybe those teams were somewhat complacent against them. They put them down, like I hope we don't, as being, oh, well, they're only a fifth seed, Estonia, so we should beat them. And maybe they got caught in the hop. Although whoever was the second team to play them, whether it be Serbia or Slovenia, maybe should have been a bit more aware. But, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't have a great knowledge of them. One of the players is a sub for Burrow and Matt, stuff like that. But they're going to see that video of John Delaney laughing like a scoosh.
Oh yeah, that'll be going up in the dressing room, I'd say.
Well, that's it exactly. They'll have all the motivational factors they need. Like, we'll go there and it could well be freezing as well. I don't know how the Irish lads are going to. You know, we're apart from the fans, that is, but we'll be well warmed up for that stage. But the players themselves, so that sort of, you know, they won't be used to those sort of conditions. But the game itself, I mean, I think the most important thing is we, as John rightly points out, we have to give them as much respect as they deserve. They've finished the group very strongly, and they've beaten Serbia, and they've beaten Slovenia. Luckily for us, I think they think we're quite like Northern Ireland, which isn't really the case. We probably play football similar, but we're a far better standard.
Yeah.
I think if we go there, we get an away goal, even if it's a one-all draw. I think that should be enough to get us through. I think the away goal is vital, though. Really important. As we've proved before, we've gotten done by it in so many playoffs in the past and stuff. But I'm sure Trapp, he's been around for 40-odd years now. He's going to, you know, maybe not that long even, but he's going to instill in the players to not be complacent and to ensure that they treat Estonia with the respect they deserve. And hopefully, I mean, over the two legs, we should be stronger.
Yeah, well, if it's any consolation, I know Estonia had a pretty impressive dance track in the Eurovision Song Contest, but I don't know, you know, I'm like yourselves, lads, I don't know too much about their teams. All I know is that they did bring on a 6'6" centre forward in I think their last game. But just moving on there, we're going to be talking about Estonia in the run up to those playoffs here on the YBIG Footy Show. But Paul, just to get a mention of the forum foot.ie that you're on, talking point are the plastic paddies, the players that probably never really wanted to play for Ireland and tried to get them to play for Ireland. There was a thread, I think, about Kevin Nolan, Jamie Noble and Jamie O'Hara. What's your views towards these lads? I know Jamie O'Hara said this week that he feels more Irish than English, but it's England who he wants to play for, ruling out any chance. But I don't think there ever was a chance really there, was there, Paul?
Yeah, I think he has an opinion of himself that not other people have of him, if you self-inflated. But he's a good player. I mean, he was terrific for Wolves at the end of the season, and he was one of the players who kept them up, like Doyle the season before. But Mark Noble isn't doing much at West Ham at the moment, and Kevin Nolan, I don't think that was ever going to materialise either. That's one of the old chestnuts that gets pulled out like October when the seasons are getting colder. But usually it's pulled out when there's less to talk about, which is that it's been brought up with the Estonia game. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm as proud as the next man that goes to any of these away games and stuff. But and that's supporting Ireland for as long as I can remember. But if he, you know, with Clinton Morris and the likes, when he played and when he pulled on the jersey, using that old cliche, he really did give everything. Whatever he said about drinking pints of Guinness and making a bit of a fool of himself, it didn't really matter when it came to the crunch. He actually gave as much as anybody born in the country.
Yeah.
They were both parents are Irish, a grandparent was Irish or whatever. He gave just as much as the next man. And that's all you can ask from a player. And I think when we see that, we get behind them. You see Simon Cox as well, like, he kind of got a bit, you know, I think everybody kind of cringed a bit when he was asked about the playoffs and our heartache in the past, and he goes, yeah, France. And everyone knew he didn't know anyone who we lost or drew with before losing to France, as in the other playoffs like Turkey and Belgium and whatnot. But he still gives everything, and he tries his best, and he actually seems to, I think they do begin to feel more Irish. I heard Matt Holland the last day on the on the telly as well, because on about Ireland, England, he just kept saying England and he said we. He got a lot of stick for saying England as we, but I heard him say Ireland as we the last day after the game. And, you know, it's great to see once they try their hardest, give 100%, that's all you can ask for. I think it's forgotten about. Initially, there is some people complaining and moaning, but they're not saying F Matt Holland when he scores the equaliser against Cameroon, are they? They're jumping up and celebrating. It's like Robbie Keane as well. Everyone seems to curse him, but they're not cursing him when he scored against Germany. They're all jumping up and celebrating.
Yeah.
Who's ever beside them. At the end of the day, once they do it in the jersey, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's it. And John, you know, the likes he was saying, you know, about players giving it 100%. We have seen several players in the Irish shirt giving it 100%, and there's no doubt about that. But what about these, you know, as Roy Keane would say, suddenly everyone's Irish. I guess, you know, being in Ireland, you know, there's a unique thing about this unbelievable wide diaspora that very few other countries actually have. But what do you think about these players like the likes of Kevin Olin, Jamie Lobel and Jamie O'Hara, that was mentioned on actualfoot.ie? I think they flirted with the temptation of playing for Ireland. I mean, was it just a media thing?
Yeah, I think some of them are probably kind of half looking for attention off other clubs, maybe. I don't know. Like, you see the likes of Jermaine Pennant there coming on saying that he's playing for Ireland. I don't know if he's ever been in Ireland, but like, I think it's a case of just looking up, kind of finding out that they have a grandparent somewhere and, oh, I might play for them and, you know, toy with the idea. And it's always kind of the players that's are kind of gone off the radar for a while or something and looking for a bit of attention. I mean, for example, Wayne Rooney is eligible for Ireland as far as I know.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen him carry him come out with the idea.
his brother declared, like, yeah.
That's right, yeah. But, so, yeah, so, I mean, like, obviously there's some genuine cases, like, you know, Kevin Kilbane, you know, because I believe he showed up for an England trial than an Ireland kiss. So, you know, he considered himself Irish. Other players like that who are very committed, who no one has a problem with them. But, yeah, the likes of Pennant, Noble, and even O'Hara, I mean, I don't know, some people say he was genuinely interested, but to be honest, I find it hard to believe with some of them. They're probably just looking for attention for some reason, maybe, you know, something to put on their Twitter account or something. But some of them, I think, wouldn't even get onto the team anyway or into the squad, so it's just kind of, get to know the ones that are genuine fairly quick.
And I guess with the genuine ones, John, yeah, it's great, I guess, a big advantage to us to have a wide diaspora like that and to have genuine people, you know, a lot of players, Irish, English born Irish players that have grown up, you know, their parents might be Irish or whatever, but they've grown up supporting Irish, Ireland all their lives, looking, you know, with Aidan McGeady, James McCarthy and, you know, the likes of Kevin Kilbane and that. And, you know, having that advantage is huge. I mean, I know a lot of Northern Ireland fans will give the Republic of Ireland a lot of stick for this thing, but it's the fact is we have this diaspora and of course you're going to use it.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, the Northern Ireland situation is probably a bit unique in that, that, you know, a lot of people, possibly rightly so, would consider themselves Irish when they're from there. And of course, Northern Ireland wouldn't see it like that. But I think it's down to the fact that historically we've have a lot of emigration, just the way it is to England and different. Well, mainly England, anyway. Most players come from Scotland. And but obviously, whatever family you're born into, they're going to pass on the traditions of where you're from. A lot of that is Ireland. You know, Ray Houghton, John Aldridge, I'm sure they're all very connected to their Irish roots. So although they're raised in different countries, I mean, there's no reason they can't still consider themselves Irish. And obviously, when players like that, players of that quality want to play for you, you're not going to turn them down. So I think it suits everybody, really.
Yeah, they become a lot more Irish than the Irish themselves. And just finally, lads, before I let you go, I know, John, there's on newboysingreen.ie, there's a big campaign underway. It's the Go Green for November 15th, the home leg, the second playoff leg against Estonia. That's got to be a big one, and a big campaign for all the fans. And the fact that, you know, it's the first time I think we've had a playoff leg at home, which is really impressive.
For the second time, second leg at home. Yeah, that's a massive advantage as well. Not just the fact we drew Estonia, but the fact we're home for the second leg. Because as Paul mentioned earlier, if we can get an away goal, even anything, 1-1, and just bring that back, I think the atmosphere will really be really be rocking for that. And that's kind of what, that's what the campaign's all about, the Go Green for November 15. It's, I mean, it's probably going to be a full house anyway, regardless, but the campaign just, it builds much more anticipation all the way up to it. So by the time it gets to the actual event, everyone's going to be encouraged to get in early, everything like that. So that the place will really turn it into a fortress for this game, no matter what happens in the away leg. So hopefully, I reckon we'll see the best atmosphere we have so far in the new stadium, you know, because it's got great potential as well, with the sound and everything. So should be 50,000 people there, well up for it, hopefully.
Yeah, and hopefully those, the FAI will fill those empty vantage seats in the Aviva Stadium. Well, listen.
Yeah, well, they're offering discounts already, I believe. 32% off.
Indeed. Well, listen, John and Paul, I want to thank you very much for taking part in the YBIG Footy Show episode 2. And we'll, I'm sure, no doubt be chatting to you again as the run up to the Estonia Crunch playoffs come true. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers, John. See you.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.